A poster is so much more than an image on paper. And for Star Wars fans, the poster played many roles. In the 1970s and 1980s, it was often the first visual representation of the upcoming films. The posters touting the 1977 release introduced moviegoers to a world previously unseen, with characters that would soon become icons of storytelling. At once, these images created a history-altering schism, a world before Star Wars and a world with Star Wars. The posters for the 1980 sequel, The Empire Strikes Back, widened the galaxy even further, and the designs presented a sweeping and thrilling promise of the next chapter, among new planets and new characters. The posters for 1983's Return of the Jedi finally announced that Empire's cliffhanger would be resolved in the trilogy's finale. Our heroes would once again unite to put a stop to Darth Vader and his legion of stormtroopers. And Luke Skywalker would once again bring balance to the Force. These posters, plastered on movie theaters across the globe, were galactic prophets on a biblical level, delivering a message for the future. Something great was coming. They were also advertisements while the films were in theaters. They reminded us of the joy and excitement that came with that very first viewing. And they beckoned us to purchase another ticket, to go back again and again, to return to Tatooine, to fly in the Millennium Falcon, to train with Yoda, to confront Darth Vader, to rescue a friend, to travel through a forest, and to defeat the Emperor. And in the years and decades after the films left theaters, the posters became nostalgic bridges to the defining Star Wars and movie-going moments in our lives. Now, they are totems, opening doors to the mystical world still living in our imaginations. They connect us to moments in darkened rooms, seated next to family members and friends as we sat wide-eyed and slack-jawed at what appeared in front of us on screens. They unearth the sights and sounds that send our hearts racing and raise goosebumps across our arms in those theaters and in front of our home TVs. They bring us back to Tatooine, to Hoth, and to the Death Star. The posters are the tangible items that encapsulate an era, from anticipation of a film's arrival to the actual viewing experience, to the memories that unlock when we look at those single images. And they did this for you, and for me, and for generations of fans all around the world. This is part one of another Poster Collectors Roundtable. This is an opportunity to hear from insightful collectors like Doug Hott, Danny Katzel, and Tony Van Dam on the topics of global posters, pre-production examples, and the rise of fakes in the hobby. This is how memories become imprinted upon memorabilia. And this is Star Wars Prototypes and Production.
Coruscant to Tatooine, and every planet in between, Star Wars, Prototypes and Production, with your host, David Quinn.
Vader. It's a trap!
Yes, Master.
We have to stand and fight.
The more you tighten your grip, Tarkin, the more star systems will slip through your fingers.
I want to learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi like my father.
The Force will be with you. Always.
Welcome to part one of the second Poster Collectors Roundtable. At the end of 2022, I sat down with Danny Katzel and Tony Van Dam for the first poster conversation for the podcast. Danny is a dear friend of mine, a Star Wars fan and an avid poster enthusiast who is also part of the wonderful Washington, D.C. Star Wars Collecting Club. The poster round table was Danny's idea, and it piqued my curiosity. I wanted to know more about these posters whose images had become icons of my childhood, my teenage years, and my time collecting as an adult. Danny suggested adding Tony to the chat as well. Tony, a West Coast Star Wars fan who had participated in a poster collecting panel at Celebration Anaheim, carries the same passion as Danny, and happily shares his knowledge with other poster collectors. In November of 2022, Danny and Tony walked me through the world of Star Wars posters and poster collecting. Together, they presented an informative and compelling overview, one that would interest new collectors as well as non-collectors, but contained details and stories that would appeal to the established enthusiasts. If you're interested in hearing this fascinating overview, you'll find it in episode 112. It's titled The Star Wars Poster Collector Roundtable, An Introduction to a World of Rare and Epic Posters. Again, that's episode 112. The three of us had discussed doing a follow-up episode to that overview. And this time, Danny and Tony aimed to dive a little deeper into poster collecting, focusing on specific areas of the hobby. And for this series, we brought another seat to the roundtable. Tony and Danny introduced me to Doug Hott, a collector who has been collecting posters since the 1980s. Doug has a deep knowledge of international and non-US posters, and for this chat, he'll take us through their rich and exciting history. Danny will be speaking about a subject close to his collecting heart, pre-production posters. And Tony will turn the spotlight on a disturbing trend within the hobby, the rise of fake posters entering the collecting market. So now that you have a roadmap, let's navigate the world of Star Wars posters. We've saved you a seat and would love to have you join us at the table today for a collector's conversation with Doug, Tony, and Danny. Gentlemen, it is so nice to be sitting around a table with you tonight talking about posters. I have to tell you, as far as the three topics that we're going to be covering, I really don't have much knowledge when it comes to international posters, pre-production posters, or fakes. And I think those three are really important parts of collecting and of the poster world. So I'm very curious to hear your takes on them. But before we begin, I just want to start with three introductory questions, just to get to know each of you a little more. So Danny, and this is really for all three of you. So we'll start with Danny. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you collect?
Sure. So I'm Danny Katzel, and I collect the original Star Wars movie era collectibles. So that's toys, autographs, and all things having to do with the theatrical release. So press kits, screening tickets, but especially posters, both pre-production and production.
Hi, this is Tony Van Dam, and I started collecting posters when I was 16, and I had about 11 by the time I was 18. And then I took a 30-year hiatus, and then I started collecting again. And I collect the old posters, the new posters, test prints, autographs like Danny. That's about it.
Hey, this is Doug Hott. So I've been collecting since I was 12 years old. I picked up my first Empire Strikes Back poster, collecting posters since I was 12 years old. So I picked up my first Empire Strikes Back poster at a flea market in 1984, 2 years after that re-release poster came out. And I've been collecting basically ever since. I had my toy collection from when I was a kid. I think like many of us, that evolved into getting all of the toys over time, and then posters, autographs, pretty much everything that Danny collects, I also collect, which leads to some very interesting conversations before, during, and after auctions that we are both bidding on.
I'm sure that's a healthy mixture of fun, competitive, and crazy at times. So wonderful. Okay, so Tony, what is your? We'll start with you. What is your favorite, your current favorite poster in your collection? So not your all-time favorite, but just one that stands out to you right now.
There are so many favorites over time, but if I'm going to pick a standout for me, it's the test print I have of the D sheet for the original Star Wars movie. And the reason that's meaningful to me is because I got to meet both of the artists that created it, which are Drew Struzan and Charlie White III. One of them invited me into his home to talk about that poster and that whole project. And the other one I've met locally. So that's why that one's really meaningful. And I do hear, or it's rumored that it's also Lucas's favorite as well.
If you share the same favorite as Lucas, you can't go wrong. So that's a good one. It's a very good one. Doug, how about you?
Yeah, it's really hard. I have literally thousands of them. And so recently I moved into a new house and I decided to hang what I thought were kind of the marquee posters in my office so I can look at them when I'm working from home. I think the one that probably stands out in my collection, and not from an artistic standpoint, but the Star Wars Triple Bill, which was a poster that was used for a one showing only. And there are two of each of these posters printed for each of the theaters that showed this. And I have one of them from the Avco Theater, which is kind of the closest one to me physically in the office. And then, you know, I do end up staring at that one quite a bit. So, yeah, that's probably my current favorite one.
And what year was that produced?
1985.
There you go. 1985. Thanks, Danny.
Excellent. Oh, that sounds like a wonderful one. So your poster is basically one of two that exist.
Correct.
Wow. Okay. And Danny?
That's, as everyone else said, that's a tough one. I will give the cop-out answer that, you know, coming from toy collecting, I collected the toys for a very long time, and you're probably going to think I'm going to say the birthday poster, but I'm not going to say that. And I actually got into posters because I was with my wife. We were at an estate sale, as we used to go all the time to new furniture and things for our house after we got married. And I walked right past a Star Wars poster that was on the wall, and my wife saw it and like secretly like nudged me to like get over here and look at this. And it was a original Star Wars poster. And I didn't know anything about posters at the time. This was over 15 years ago now. And we bought it. It was relatively cheap. And then just the process of trying to figure out what this was. Is it real? How do I tell if it's real? And it turned out to be an original style A Star Wars 30x40 window box poster. So it's a little bit larger than the standard one sheet. And that got me hooked into collecting posters and started me on this long journey. And I like to remind her all the time that this whole spiraling collection is all her fault for that, finding that one poster.
And it sounds like it led to a friendship with Tony and Doug. And now the
yes,
three of us,
I didn't know any of them at the time.
Wow. Well, that's, I love that. I love that. You know, it essentially started with your wife and has brought you all the way to this point as well, where you are, a very knowledgeable collector, you know, who's willing to share your time and, you know, the information that you've gathered over the years. And that really goes for the three of you. And I'm very impressed with the poster collecting community and what you guys have done as well to bring information to light. This next question, we'll start with Doug. So Doug, what's a poster that you'd like to own someday?
Yeah, it's a great question. And one of the things that I found both with the community that surrounds this hobby is that the longer you're in it, the more you discover as you go along, and there's always something new and something different. And just when you think, you know, every poster out there, 'cause should be a finite number of them. There's something new that you learn about, and then that becomes kind of like the next kind of interesting poster to go after. So I've been really fortunate that between the group and you know, lots of other sources, I've been able to pick up pretty much every single poster that I've ever wanted. There's been a few rare exceptions. I know where they are. They're just very difficult to acquire because they're locked up in collections. But the one that I feel like I've missed out on the most has been an international poster. It's from Hong Kong. And there are a handful of posters from Hong Kong. And this one happens to be the one for Empire Strikes Back. So it shares a lot of the same artwork that the U.S. Empire Strikes Back. It's called the Gone with the Wind poster because it's very reminiscent of the Gone with the Wind artwork. So it's got Luke and Leia, Han and Leia, you know, in an embrace, you know, with their faces kind of close to each other. But there's a Hong Kong version of that, and it slipped through my grasp multiple times. And most recently, right before, I guess, Celebration Europe, I lost it again. And so that's probably the one I'm still on the hunt for.
I have a feeling that you will get it one day. I believe you sent me an image, a picture of that, and it is a beautiful one. I hope you're able to land that. And just a great piece. I think the Gone with the Wind Empire Strikes Back one is one of my favorite posters of all time. It's a beautiful design. So good luck on that one. Danny?
Thanks.
That's a tough one. I will say that for the original Star Wars Style A pre-production posters, which I'm sure we'll get to later, almost all of them, for whatever reason, are what we call the international version, where there's no PG rating printed on the poster. But there are at least three copies that I've seen over the past 15 years come up for auction that had the PG rating printed on there. And one day I hope to get that as well. So I'll have the international version and the PG version, domestic version, side by side.
Okay. So do you have any leads on one right now?
I do, but it's too expensive for me. So I'll wait patiently for another one.
Okay. Something to aspire to. I really like that. And it's nice to have those sort of white whales that we can chase for a while and then hopefully land when the time is right. Tony, we'll end this one with you. What's yours?
Yeah, it's a really hard decision. And I think, like Doug said, there's always something that's coming up. You know, you always think you've got like almost everything and then something shows its face and you go, wow, where did that come from? I almost want to say it's a couple. One is the Revenge of the Jedi test print, which is that nice red big Darth Vader. And there were two locations where they were, and one of the locations is now, it's been sold. And I think Danny has the other one that I unfortunately passed up on, and I don't know why I
you
ever
passed
did
on
that.
It. I got it fair and square.
No, that's absolutely right, Danny. And I did. And that's okay, because recently I got a UK Hildebrandt quad, and I'm quite happy with that because that's also really a nice poster. And I've always loved the Hildebrandt art. But I'm kind of digressing, because actually, if I was wanting one big one, I would want the Star Wars billboard poster, which has that same artwork as the half sheet, which is actually what you would put on a billboard. I don't know where I put it in my house. It would cover a whole wall, but just having that poster would be kind of give you street cred, I think.
Okay. And I think if you were able to get that, you'd probably need to buy a second house just to store it and house it. So, okay. All three are fantastic choices. And I really do hope that, well, at least two of you are able to obtain that. The other one, the billboard one, sounds pretty huge. If you were to get it, if you were to actually, you know, land one, Tony, what would you do with it?
That, you know, sometimes you don't think about it. Sometimes you just get it and then think about it later. I would figure it out. honestly, I would figure it out. And like maybe just getting a whole other room built just to display that would be kind of cool.
I love your passion for it. That I find that so exciting too, because, and I understand as a collector, you know, that feeling of, if I can land something, I'll worry about where I'm going to put it or how I'm going to display it at a later point. And I think that says a lot to the heart of the collector. So that's great. So now that we know that the three of you a little more, and I'd like to go into some of the three main topics that we're going to be talking about today. So we'll start with international posters. And Doug, I have to ask you, I know, to me, as somebody who doesn't collect the international posters, just even talking about it is somewhat overwhelming, because in my head there are so many. But I think there are a lot of people who actually don't even, you know, who aren't familiar with the poster world, who don't understand what an international poster actually is. So can you give us a little idea of what an international poster is and how it differs from, say, a domestic poster?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, so first of all, when I say international, I think when we all say international here, we're all sitting in the United States. So for us, international means, you know, something outside of the United States. But of course, as a global audience, a potentially global audience, that, you know, an international poster for someone in Spain would be anything outside of Spain. So as we're talking about international posters here, we probably need to come up with a better terminology. But I say non-US posters is probably the right way to talk about it, to be more inclusive of the global collecting community. So yeah, that's really by definition, meaning that a piece of, you know, paper, and it could be anything from a very small, it's called handbill size poster. So maybe something that's like a, you know, passed out at someone on the street could be a poster, you know, all the way up to Tony's billboards, and primarily used for, you know, advertising the movie, Star Wars or Empire or Jedi. Most of my collecting is focused on original trilogy posters. So, you know, that would be anything that was used for non-US distribution. And in some cases, the movie wasn't actually intended for certain countries. So where they were creative and decided to make their own advertising material for those particular countries where they were showing the film, maybe with or without permission of Fox and Lucasfilm at the time. So that's how I think we would define a non-US poster here.
Okay, I think that makes sense. And I think that's, as you said, appealing to a global audience, that makes more sense to call it a non-US poster, because the word international could mean different things depending, of course, on where you are and where you're located. So then why were so many non-US posters created around the Star Wars franchise? And were they created by Lucasfilm and then delivered to different countries, or were they created within their own countries?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the answer depends on what movie you're talking about, right? So with Star Wars, there was a lot, and I'm sure that Tony and Danny will chime in here if I get anything misstated, but when Star Wars was originally created, the advertising material that went around it was actually a little unusual for the time, because in late 76, early 77, obviously George had a lot of belief that this thing was going to be a giant hit, or maybe he didn't think it was going to be a giant hit. Nobody really knew if it was going to be a hit or not. And so
maybe he just wanted to promote the hell out of it.
Yeah, and it's interesting because like the original poster, even in the U.S., was just text-based, right? So it was the, you know, coming to your galaxy this summer poster. And so it didn't have any images. It didn't have any artwork. It was simply a black poster with originally like silver Mylar text, and then later it was changed to a matte finish text. But I think once – and that poster was the – original advertising for the film, at least domestically in the US. And there were some versions of that same poster that were used internationally in the next style. There were actually so many posters used for the US campaign, even before they knew that it was going to be an interesting, you know, box office movie. So the second poster the third poster that came out was also a text-based poster. And that poster was a very similar kind of, you know, coming to your galaxy this summer type text. But then I think they knew that there was potentially something to it, right? As they started to expand theaters and they started to release the film internationally, or outside the US, I should say. And they started to translate that. So there's a Spanish version of that poster, for example. I think once Lucasfilm and Fox distributing decided that, hey, this thing is a big deal, then they started making a lot of additional artwork for the posters. And so there were several versions of this throughout Star Wars, specifically from, like I said, like 1976 through the international or the non-US releases through 1978, 1979 even. And then those particular posters in some cases were literally the same artwork. So this, we call the Style A poster, was also used, and we'll talk about this maybe a little bit more, but for the domestic audience, for the US audiences, they had to have a rating on the poster. So it was rated G or PG, rated R. And of course, in the case of Star Wars, it was rated PG. So you'll see a little PG ingot or text on the poster. But internationally, that might have not been, that wasn't used. So they might have had a different way to tell audiences, you know, is this film appropriate for different age groups? But they use the exact same artwork, the exact same text. The only difference would be with or without that PG ingot that Danny was mentioning earlier. So that was like the easy one is, you know, we'll just send the same artwork and, you know, Fox distributing for the places where those posters were used or distributed through Fox, they could use the same artwork, use the same everything. The difference would just be in some of the text-based items on the poster. And then as the movie continued to expand, different artists were tagged for different campaigns. So in the UK, for example, they had a whole different approach to how they wanted to market the Star Wars film. And so instead of having a single poster and a single light box or a single, you know, the boxes that sit on the side of the marquees and in the outside the theater, inside the theater, those were all standard at the time for 27 by 41 inches. And I think you've probably talked about that on a previous podcast, but you know, outside the US, there was a huge range of ways to print these posters at the time. And so, and every country has a slightly different, box or way that they would display the poster. So in the UK, for example, there's a series of posters that might have, they're all kind of connected to each other and they would have the different size as the centerpiece. So the 30 by 40 inches, for those of you that are in the English system, and they're more horizontal based. And again, Tony talked a little bit about that earlier with one of the early Star Wars posters that were set up that way. But even in the UK, there were three separate posters specifically just for Star Wars. And as the played on over time, they had new artwork come in. And, you know, the reasoning for that, I'm not as familiar with, but I'm guessing it had to do with keeping the imagery fresh for new people that might want to go see the film and make it more exciting and more impactful over time. And so what ended up even having with Star Wars is that you might have three or four different artwork types for the same movie. Again, which was really unusual because normally that was reserved for things like re-releases of films. And this was still a film that was running in the theater and creating new artwork over time. So as the result of that, so for people that had licensed distribution, each licensee of that film for, say, maybe it was different in Spain, maybe it was different in Italy, maybe it was different in Turkey, each one had its own distributor. That distributor could help influence the artwork for what they thought would work for that local market. So you have this huge range of artwork that shows up on these posters. And probably the thing that really drew me to it was these are little works of art. There's some Star Wars posters that are, like I said, just text, and it's interesting for the historical value, but not interesting necessarily visually all the time. But the range of artwork for the non-US posters is just all over the place, from, you know, modern art looking things to, you know, very kind of photorealistic to literally photographs from the film, you know, still images that were used, for example, that were kind of cobbled together to make an advertising artwork for the film. So when we talk about what is a non-US poster, it's basically any piece of artwork, and why there were so many created was because we have all these distributors around the globe. And then there were certain countries where there was no distributor and they weren't licensed to show the film. And yet it was such a global phenomenon throughout the course of the late 70s, the early 80s, and even into the 90s for countries that were prohibited from showing the film because of they were part of the former Soviet Union. And people had to come up with their own way to advertise for the film. And sometimes they'd never seen the movie when they did this and created just the most bizarre, outrageous artwork for a film that they've never seen. And so those create some really interesting visual opportunities for folks. And obviously as a collector, those kind of more obscure, strange, random posters are highly sought after.
So for the ones that were created where the movie was allowed to be distributed, did they have to be approved by Lucasfilm as far as the images that were used or even the design of the poster?
I can't say for certain in every country. I know that, you know, for example, Gary Kurtz, who was the producer on the film, was very involved in a lot of the approval of the artwork and the layouts and the design for a lot of things, but specifically for between him and Charles Lippincott, who also was, I think, the marketing lead at the time, were very involved in a lot of the international distribution. And one of the reasons why we know so much about the international posters is because Gary kept basically a copy of everything.
Multiple copies
of everything. And so it was all in one place for a period of time. And of course, you know, obviously with his passing and a lot of that collection being sold off or moved around over time, you know, some of those pieces have gotten out. Some other interesting things that have happened. I just learned recently that in some countries, the National Library holds a copy of some of these posters as part of their private collections or their I guess public collections in that case. So we have this kind of vast wealth of knowledge of these, and again, you know, I think Charles and Gary were very involved, especially early on, in approving the artwork and the layout and the content of those posters.
So when Gary was collecting these and holding on to them, and then they, you know, eventually made it out to the public upon his passing, was there any information that collectors gleaned from the vast amounts of stuff that he had or the different types of items that he had?
Yeah, definitely. I think that was, and I think when Steve Sansweet and Pete Vilmer, who were kind of they were the ones that really got me hooked when they published the Star Wars poster book. And it's a beautiful, beautiful book. And if anyone's interested in Star Wars posters, I highly recommend finding a copy of that. But a lot of this was in Steve and Steve Sansweet's collection. But I think there are things that were added over time through some of Gary's collection. And Gary's collection still has not been fully documented. It's warehouses full of stuff. So I know they're slowly working through, the person who's the conservator of that collection now is slowly working through getting everything archived and tagged and inventoried, but it's a long, long process. But yes, a lot of stuff has come out of there. And you know, pictures of things. And again, when pieces could be sold out of that collection, they have been. And I was fortunate enough to pick up, actually, we were talking about the Hong Kong poster earlier. My Hong Kong Star Wars poster came from Gary Kurtz's collection, and I picked that up in, I think it was 2009, I believe, is when I was able to acquire that piece.
It's nice to be able to own a piece of the history that was not only part of Star Wars, but also as part of Gary archiving these materials and these posters as well too. So congratulations on that. That's a fantastic one to own.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, yeah. I was want to say I also think I have in my collection one of Gary Quartz's pieces, and that was through a secondary seller, but a well reputable person. So I believe my Happy Birthday poster is also from Gary Quartz's collection as well.
So two iconic posters that have made their way into the hands of collectors. I love hearing stories like that, and I love that, you know, again, we become the archivists and the historians for Star Wars and for poster collecting. So Doug, then how do most collectors acquire these posters?
There's several different sources for them. I think we all scour eBay regularly to look for pieces that we don't have, and that's probably true for any collector, right? I mean, there's always random stuff that shows up
almost daily
on eBay, exactly. So I think we all have our little searches going and all that kind of stuff. So that's definitely a vector for acquisition. I think there's other, like, some of the large reputable auction houses, they have, I mean, back in the day they were doing 3 times a week, I think it was, poster sales, and there was always posters in those. And some of those, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about specific names of auction houses, but
sure.
Sure. So like Heritage Auction has a weekly poster auction, and I would say, I think every single week they have a Sunday poster auction, and there are some Star Wars posters in there. They're not always international posters. That's often the same posters types over and over again. There was so much material created, so much advertising material created for these films that, and that includes if you're interested in the prequels or you're interested in the last three, the Rise of Skywalker, the Skywalker Saga posters, or if you're interested in Caravan of Courage or the Ewok Adventure, or, basically anything you can think of, there was printed material made for all of those. So Heritage is a weekly auction, and they have posters there. E-movie posters, another one that I know Danny and Tony and I are regular bidders in, and we, have that as another option. They don't always have international posters. They don't always have Star Wars posters, but oftentimes they do. So those are probably the two big auction houses. There are some smaller, especially for what I look for the non-US posters, is there's some smaller country-specific auction places that I look to periodically. There's one in the UK. There's one in some of the Eastern European countries, and so that's been a source for me from time to time. And then Prop Store in the UK and the US also have done poster auctions. Usually, one or all of those do a specific Star Wars poster auction at least twice a year. Danny and Tony, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's twice a year that they do a Star Wars only auction. And there's a lot of material that comes through those from the collecting community, from different sources that they have. They can stockpile posters over time too, that they hold specifically for those events. So definitely through the auctions. And then now that I have a lot of what I was after, some of the more unusual things come through private sales with connections that I've made with folks over time, probably like a lot of other collecting groups, where those private sales are a good source for not only finding things that are a little more unique or things that people will only sell because they know where it's going and who it's going to, and I think it's sometimes less risky for them because they're not at the whims of the auction houses.
Right. And there's also the possibility of trading as well. I think so. I've found that studying the different auctions, if especially for someone who's just starting, that's a pretty good way, by reading the listings and by seeing what pieces come up for sale, what they sell for, that helps to give you an idea of values. And you had mentioned the Star Wars poster book as well. Are there any other resources or anything that you would recommend to newer collectors or even established collectors that could help them as far as learning about the posters and understanding the market for them, what they are, what's available?
Yeah, I mean, I have to make a plug.
There's a Star Wars poster.
Yeah, there's a Star Wars poster group on Facebook.
Wait a second. There's a Star Wars poster group on Facebook?
Yeah, the moderators are a little sketchy, so you have to be careful with them. But that's definitely I encourage everybody whenever we do these kinds of things to join the group. You'll learn just a huge wealth of information from that, and you get to see other people's collections, and you can ask questions, and you know there are no dumb questions, and I think the moderators who are my co guests on this call or on this podcast have been doing that for a long time, and they're awesome people. So highly recommend that.
We've got a good group of collectors, and it's pretty international in terms of the people involved. So we're also getting an understanding of what is out there and what might be real and what might not be. But that's something we'll talk about later. And one other site I wanted to mention, as the Star Wars poster, StarWarsPosters.com, where the person that put that together really gave a lot of different listings of a variety of different Star Wars posters. It's pretty pretty comprehensive there. So that's another site I would recommend.
And you had mentioned before as well that the non-US posters differ from the U.S. posters in the sense that there are so many different sizes. Do you find that there is, for collectors, is there one size that's preferred over the others when it comes to international and non-U.S. posters? Or is it sort of whatever comes up or whatever is popular at the time people will gravitate toward?
I think it's really personal preference and ability to, you know, enjoy them. I think to Tony's comment earlier, I own several billboards. They sit in, you know, storage, careful storage, but it is really hard to appreciate a billboard poster, even if you have a very large room. The way that you would, most of these posters, in fact, I think all of them come in multiple pieces. And so you kind of have to put and that's how they were put up on the actual billboards, is they were, you know, glued in sections. And so you have to kind of assemble the sections like a puzzle piece to see the full thing. But it is, you know, to hang them on a wall, you would have to invest in linen backing them or something like that to really appreciate it, or put it in different sections on, in different frames and kind of stick the frames together, I guess. But it's very hard to display a billboard. And then I think, you know, some people like to be able to put them in existing portfolios or, you know, different sleeves that they have access to preserve them. And so I think, you know, anything smaller than a standard, you know, smaller or equal to a standard US movie poster, so 27 by 41 inches, fits nicely in the existing, you know, kind of archival storage options, whether that's a Baroque portfolio or an Itoya portfolio or something like that. So you can actually see them, or, you know, I know some people use flat files. And those flat files can typically hold up to a 30 by 40 or maybe slightly larger poster. But you get beyond that, you get into the bus shelter posters, or which are the U.S. standard is 40 inches by 60 inches, but some of the international ones are larger, and it makes it just difficult to display them effectively. So I think a lot of people gravitate to the ones that are more manageable on your wall, for example. I have a sickness where I'm a completist. So I go after kind of everything, at least one copy of everything. And my original goal was to acquire one theatrical poster from every country that had a theatrical release. And so I've largely achieved that goal. And then I got into, well, but there's other posters out there that also fit that, even if it's not one from every, it's like, well, maybe I want them all from this country.
I just want you to know every collector in the world right now is just nodding along with you.
Exactly. It's a sickness, right? It's a dopamine hit. It's like, I found something I didn't have. But yeah, I think most people who get started in it, and it's really up to what you like and what artwork, you know, is attractive to you. And, you know, whether you're going after the historical value of it, or, you know, the beautiful artwork, or some really obscure thing, like everyone has their own approach to collecting. But, you know, I think this is one space where there's really kind of something for everybody. And it's, you know, at the end of the day, you get to hang something on your wall or put something in a portfolio that you can look at over and over again. And, you know, even my significant other allows me to hang my posters in my office and maybe a couple around the house, because they are attractive. You know, it's something you can look at that's pleasant and is a good conversation piece when you have, you know, guests over.
They really are works of art, and I've always been impressed. And you're right, there's so much to collect, whether it's down to sizing or the licensed versus the unlicensed posters, and just the different levels of the artistic quality that's in each one, or the level of imagination that was put into each poster. Yeah. And creativity. So I really appreciate them. Could you give me a few examples of some of the iconic non-US posters that, you know, maybe I might have seen or might be familiar with, and ones that maybe I'm not, but that have resonated with you?
Sure. You know, I think one of the, each country had a slightly different campaign for the film. And the ones that I kind of go back to time and time again are the UK posters. And, you know, from the first one that Tony mentioned earlier, the Hildebrandt 30 by 40, the quad, which is just a beautiful piece of artwork that really captures the kind of the magic of the Star Wars film. But beyond that, they did this whole campaign, and I think it's 11 posters. It's called the Dirty Dozen, but I think there's only 11. And it's very much in the vein of this kind of Magnificent Seven, spectacle that they put together. So like one poster is titled Adventure, and another one's entitled Excitement. And they have like these big logo, you know, or lettering on it that says Adventure Excitement. And, really to try to, it's kind of funny looking back on it now, you know, oh my gosh, it was almost 50 years later. But you have to remember that at the time people were like trying to get people into the theater to see this film and marketed this way that was like this swashbuckling adventure. It kind of harkens back to that, you know, that kind of like, you know, 50s era cowboy Western spectacle. Those are just fun posters because it does feel a little campy and a little different from how we typically think about how Star Wars was marketed. And then, you know, look, I think there's some really interesting international versions, especially as you get into the former Soviet Union posters. Now, most of these countries were not allowed to show Star Wars because it was a U.S. film until the fall of the Berlin Wall, really, and the collapse of the Soviet Union. And so a lot of these posters are from the early 90s, actually. So like 91, 92. When they were finally allowed to show the film, or they had access to the film to show to the public. And because they were marketing this film without ever having seen the film, and I talked about this a little bit earlier, but there's some crazy posters that are from the Soviet Union. There's some crazy posters from Hungary and Estonia and Yugoslavia a little bit less so, but that are just, you know, they're cobbled together photographs basically of, there's one that's very famous, which is kind of nicknamed the Exploding Vader Head. And, it was for Return of the Jedi, and it has this, just camera parts that they used and like superimposed on kind of this Vader mask that they must have gotten a hold of at some point, and they kind of cracked it. And so it looks like Vader's head is exploding, or the mask is exploding, and all these different component parts. And that's kind of one of the iconic international posters. There's one from Russia that is this weird cat-faced figure with a bunch of kind of psychedelic colors around it. And it's, again, the nickname is like Puma Head, because it looks like a puma or a cougar of some sort.
I always thought those were lightsabers coming out of his head.
Oh, you know what? Maybe
they are. They look like lightsabers.
Yeah, I guess they're like the bands of light coming out of his head. Yeah, that's right. With different colors.
And by the way, David, both Danny and myself, when Doug is describing all these posters, we know exactly what he's talking about because we know these posters. We don't have them in our collection, but we're quite aware of those different varieties, and especially those Hungarian ones with me. They're just crazy looking.
Those are my favorite ones that I don't have.
Yeah. But I've been fortunate enough to acquire all of the Hungarian posters in multiple different sizes. And that's another weird use case where they actually printed up to four different sizes for the same artwork. And it's all the same artist. He did both Star Wars Empire and Return of the Jedi. And they printed these, I mean, I don't know how many movie theaters were showing the trilogy in 1990, whatever it was, in Hungary. I can't imagine there were that many, but there are a astounding number of Hungarian movie posters for these films. And they're just super trippy. The artwork is phenomenal. And you can look at them and go, okay, I guess, yeah, that I can see Darth Vader in that. I can see an AT-AT in that. I can see, you know, the different, you know, Star Wars kind of archetypes in those posters. But
and then there's a weird monster with a sword.
Yeah, and then there's a weird monster with a sword. Yeah, that has nothing to do with Star Wars. So, yeah, the artwork is awesome, and you know, it's there's such a huge range of just beautiful, weird things to go after, and yes, it's just a really rewarding hobby in that respect.
I think the first poster, the first non-US poster that I'd ever seen, was probably, I want to say it was in the early to mid 90s. It might have even been in Steve Sansweet's From Concept to Screen to Collectible book, but I believe it was the Exploding Vader Head. And I remember seeing that as a younger person and looking at that and saying, I've never seen anything like this, but it is absolutely Star Wars, and I fell in love with it. So the non-US posters have always stayed with me. You know, and I've seen them from time to time, never collected them, but really have developed an appreciation from seeing them and then from speaking with people like you. And you guys just, you know, the fact that you are able to collect these and to, you know, that they've survived. I mean, we, as vintage collectors, you know, for the action figures and prototype collectors, it's amazing to see what has surfaced, all these years. So, has there been any sort of international find recently or where something has surfaced that was long thought to have been destroyed or gone?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's two things that come to mind. One, which is not recent, but is, I would say, a treasure trove of pre-production artwork for the Star Wars posters, the original Star Wars posters. So A New Hope, for those of you that call it that. And I believe that Danny owns one of those. There was an eBay auction in 2013, I want to say, where a trove was uncovered from a storage unit in Arizona. And it was a person that had worked on the pre-production artwork. It was he had passed away. His brother opened up his storage unit, and here were, I believe it was somewhere between 8 and 12 different pre-production artwork renderings for the Star Wars posters. And that was, unfortunately, at the time, I was not quick enough in the auction to acquire any of those at the time. But I did acquire a black and white Hong Kong poster out of that cache. And that was, and I believe that's a pre-production piece for the Hong Kong international poster. So that's pretty special to me because I have the production piece and the pre-production piece for that. And then the other thing that I can think of from an international standpoint is recently there've been a couple Bulgarian posters that no one had seen. One for Star Wars, one for Empire, and one for Jedi. And I believe the source of those was, I mentioned earlier, but from the National Library of Bulgaria, who had kind of unearthed these that they had in their collection. And then roughly at the same time, a few of these one of each, I believe, have gotten out into, you know, the wild. And I was fortunate enough to acquire the Star Wars and Empire versions of that. But the Jedi version is still eluding me, but it will come. It's just a matter of time.
It usually does, right? You know, as long as if we look long enough and you know, if we make connections within the hobby and have a core group of friends that also help us to find things, these pieces do eventually turn up in some way. So I hope you are able to get that final piece. Doug, this was fascinating. And I know there's, you know, you're really just covering a very tiny piece of this world because it is so large and so thorough, and there are so many different examples. But thank you for really slimming it down for us and for giving us a general idea of what is out there and what makes it different from the domestic U.S. posters that were created.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much.
Can I add a couple things?
Yeah, sure.
So, Tony, I think you meant for the website, I think you meant to say StarWarsMoviePoster.com, which has the great collection of scans of posters from all over the world. And then regarding the international or non-U.S. posters, I think it's easy to forget these days that where a movie is released worldwide all at the same time, that back when Star Wars was released, now it was a rolling release, not only in the U.S., but in the whole world. So it was released in May of 1977 in a few theaters, and then over the summer, it was expanding to more and more theaters in the United States. But it didn't get released outside the United States until later. So the U.K. didn't get Star Wars until Christmas, and Japan didn't get Star Wars until summer of 1978. So there was a lot of time to prepare the advertising campaigns. And we said before that no one knew Star Wars was going to be a big hit, but for non-US, they knew it was a big hit. So there was a lot of time to make a advertising campaign for the biggest movie of all time and get more artists to come in, see the movie, make posters, approve the posters, and get them ready months ahead of the release date. So there wasn't this quick rush that we had for the original release in the United States. So, for example, I know for the United Kingdom, we had what we call the Style C poster by Tom Chantrell, and he saw Star Wars as part of a screening in July of 77. And I actually own some of his tickets that he used to see the screening, to watch the movie, to get ideas to make a poster for the movie. And he had 5-6 months to make a poster to get it out in time for the movie. So in Japan, they even had even more time. So there was a lot of time to make the movie advertising materials and new posters. And then because people knew it was going to be a smash hit, they saved everything because they knew it was a big hit. That was my little extra part there. I gotta
add something to that, Danny, is that also Tom Chantrell's daughter actually joined our group for a while. And we took the Chantrell poster and took it apart and found out all the different elements or all the different reference material.
A lot of the images are from the press kits, photographs, yeah, and things.
Exactly. Including like the photo of his wife, which was part of Princess Leia. And so we actually composed that exact poster, but using all the elements that they took from all the different images that they used for that.
I was going to say also, as far as finds recently, you mentioned the Hungarian posters, the artist who made them passed away. And there was a relatively recent auction of his estate, and he had a lot of pre-production work. There was a couple of like proof posters. I know there was two of them joined together, an uncut sheet of two of them side by side, at least one copy. And I think that was a big surprise that we could find pre-production Hungarian Star Wars poster material.
Yeah, that's a great call, Danny. And I benefited from that auction. So I actually own the proof, the two side-by-side poster from that auction, as well as some other kind of unique Hungarian stuff that's come out around his estate that were I wouldn't say proof so much, but more like test prints, and we'll get into the distinction between that later. But yeah, there's been some stuff. So I got really kind of big into the Hungarian poster world, you know, over the last few years. And so I've been trying to get as much of that as I can, including things like lobby cards and at another, maybe another podcast time, but there were literally hundreds of bootleg cards that were made by tobacco shops in Hungary that were given out to kids with, you know, purchase of a pack of gum or something, and or for sale. And it's just a fascinating kind of like side part of that advertising space for the movie.
Thanks for listening to part one of another Poster Collectors Roundtable. Danny, Tony, and Doug will join us for part two, where they'll share more stories and more of their knowledge of pre-production posters, the rise of fakes within the hobby, and what collecting Star Wars posters has meant to each of them. I'm looking forward to the rest of the conversation in the second part, as I've learned so much from our three friends so far. And don't forget, there's always a seat for you at the roundtable on Star Wars, prototypes, and production.